So Bob, you wanted to test the sound, or
we're ready to go?
We're ready to go. Okay. First off, I want to just make sure to thank everybody for showing up tonight. I know that it's been a little bit of short notice, but I think that also there's a little bit of that's what we need to expect as we go down the road. Clearly, there's a lot of work that we're going to have to be doing, and when we get to certain work efforts, whether it's through technical advisory committee or having other town hall meetings, we're going to want to try to get back into the community as soon as we can and make the presentations as appropriate. For tonight's meeting, the overall approach is obviously we wanted to have an opportunity for everybody to meet some of the members on our staff and different aspects of the program that we're going to be working on. And it gives us the opportunity then also to meet you, property owners, residents, and a number of the community leaders. The presentation overall is going to be basically a two-part presentation, where the first part of the presentation is going to be with the county staff, myself, and the individuals who are here. And the second, and that portion of the presentation is going to be to discuss some of the issues that we've been hearing and as we've been doing some of our basic preliminary research, some of the things that we know have are issues in the community. And then we're going to conclude with some question and answers. And certainly we've already had numerous questions posted to the website. We appreciate everybody who's already been providing input. But I'll get into these details a little bit in a minute. Before we go any further, though, I want to introduce our supervisor-elect, Bruce Gibson, and he's going to come and provide some opening remarks.
Thanks very much, Pablo. You know, the first challenge I have here is to read my notes in the dim religious light, so I think I'm actually going to dispense with them and speak more from the heart. What I wanted to do tonight was, first of all, thank you all for being here. Thank Pablo and his staff of the county for organizing this. What I want to offer is just some comments to sort of set the stage on this project that we're going to embark upon together. And what I really want to stress tonight is that word, together. I don't need to relate to you the struggles over many years that this community has undertaken in a quest to solve this problem. But as we approach this new year, I'm excited because I think we're on the threshold of a new beginning. And I think if we work together, we can take advantage of a new year, take advantage of a new supervisor, if that didn't come out just right, you know, it's partly by design, and take advantage of a new situation in terms of this project being under the authority and responsibility of the county. As I look out here tonight, I'm really optimistic that we can be successful in this. I'm optimistic because I look out at this room and I see faces that I know have been involved in this issue for many, many years with a wide diversity of opinion sitting together in the same room, and I take that to be a very good sign. This is important. And one of the things that I think a theme that will emerge here is that both Pavo and his staff and I as your elected official really want to do is bring back a sense of civic cohesion to the community of Los Osos. You all deserve it. You know, I've spent a good chunk of the last year knocking on your doors. Excuse me for the irritation if I caught you at dinner, but I have gotten to know many of you, and I know in this time that I've met a lot of good folks in this community, and I'm firmly convinced that moving forward we can be successful. I don't want to dwell on the consequences of us not being successful. I think all of you are pretty well aware that if this attempt at a project does not come to fruition, we enter a place of deep uncertainty, the consequences of which no one really can predict. But I want to set that aside for this evening, and I want to speak to the positive. I've had the pleasure over the last few weeks of meeting with Paavo and others in the public works staff, meeting with our county administrative department, and meeting with our county council. And I can tell you that we have a fine group of individuals in county government who are enthusiastic and are committed to moving forward with this community on a wastewater project. This is not a project that the county is doing for Los Osos. It's not a project that the county is doing to Los Osos. It really is a project that I see that we are doing with the residents of Los Osos. And I think as Paavo gets into the presentation and others of his staff, you will see that the decisions do rest with you, the property owners and residents of the community of Los Osos. As he pointed out, as Paavo pointed out in a viewpoint that was published some weeks ago, the job of the county is to bring you information, to bring you options, to bring you possibilities. And you'll see as this process goes along, I hope, a rich and detailed and solid understanding of what the possibilities are to solve this problem that's vexed us all for so long. I think looking at the process, as your elected official, I stand with you in working with your county staff to be sure that they're doing a timely, a thorough, objective, fair analysis of the possibilities for this project, and coming to you often and openly to communicate the results of their work. This tonight is a first step along that road. And I think you're going to be impressed both by the work that's been done to date and the plans for the future. I hope that we can have many more town meetings here with every bit as diverse a group of folks. And it's looking at the what you all can bring to this. I would ask that you bring an open mind, a sense of community, a sense of optimism in an effort to rebuild that sense of community that I know has existed in Los Osos over the years. And the other thing that I would ask you to bring to this process is a modicum of patience. And you're going to see that this process actually is going to be moving along at a fairly brisk rate in order to meet some timelines. And so it may sound a little bit odd that I suggest that patience is necessary, but I think as we get into the details here, you'll see where that comes to play. We're going to be going over material that many of you have talked about for many, many years. What we want to do is develop a sense that the information that's being provided to you has been thoroughly considered, objectively analyzed, and when decisions are made and value judgments are made between different options, that reasons have been given. So in listening to what you hear tonight, in thinking forward about what the process is going to be, I'd ask you to just not react immediately, if you would, to think about it for a little while. If you have questions, if you have concerns, Paavo and the staff have made a considerable effort to provide a website where your questions, concerns can be addressed. And as your elected official, I want to hear about your questions and concerns, especially if you don't feel that they're being addressed as fully as you would like. So standing here tonight, again, I have a tremendous hope. I have a certain sense of excitement that we're about to bark on something that will be the solution to a problem that's been on the front burner of this community, and that we can use this as a stepping stone to some wonderful things from Los Osos. I appreciate being here. I'm going to be here all evening, and after the formal presentation, I look forward to talking with as many of you as we can. We'll look forward. Thank you.
Thanks, boss. New boss. Again, to sort of, I want to go in just a little bit more detail before we get started about our approach. Mentioned that, you know, it's an opportunity for us to meet you and you to meet us. And as Bruce had mentioned, he mentioned the word diversity. And I want to really make sure to bring it up in the context of two different issues that are sort of in the public arena right now, because we know that there's been a lot of discussions regarding the formation of a technical advisory committee and some of the comments that I made in response to questions last week at the CSD's meeting. And so I want to make sure to clarify those as well as clarify our position on some of the existing interagency efforts. The details of the technical advisory committee, though, are actually going to be later. But with respect to our request for people to apply for the technical advisory committee, it is because we really do believe that that we would like to have on the technical advisory committee a real cross-section of the community. We think that there's a lot of diverse opinions that are out there, and with the technical advisory committee's big job of being doing a pro-con analysis of the different projects that we put out on the table, we think that the validity of that pro-con analysis is just increased or strengthened when it reflects the diverse opinions that exist in the community. Certainly, we know that this is a challenging issue, but I think that that's also sort of a first step in respecting the differences of opinions that do exist. With respect to the interagency efforts themselves, I've made a pledge to the board members that I'm going to do the best job that I can in promoting the interagency efforts. Certainly, this is part of the beginning of a relationship. And sometimes it's the awkwardness in the beginning of a relationship, but it's also a challenging situation that has a lot of details associated with it, and sometimes we take two steps forward and one step back, and sometimes there's bumps along the road, but we're continuing to be committed to working with the CSD. Again, we know that we have been, effective January 1st, authorized under AB 2701 to take the lead on the wastewater project. The CSD, you know, remains in place for all other of its existing services, and it's certainly our hope to, you know, to help move it forward even when there's challenges along the way. With the two-part presentation, I mentioned that part one is going to be with the county staff, and part two is going to be with our project team, and our consultants are sitting down here. And part of that is that county staff, in real general, it's our job to make sure that we understand the issues. We're the representatives of your local government, and we need to make sure that we understand issues. And so during the county staff presentation, I'll be asking questions of the individuals who are up here and who have different types of expertise, and that will begin sort of the, you know, our expression to you of how we understand some of the issues to be shaping up. And the project team is really about then developing the alternatives. Staff needs to make sure we understand issues, project team and bring in the experts to help us with the alternatives, and it's through those coordinated efforts that we'll start then over time developing recommendations. Specifically on the project team, we're going to talk about viable project alternatives and our approach to developing all the alternatives. I mentioned the technical advisory committee, and then we'll do a little bit of a wrap-up or a summary with the project management plan. We're also going to do questions and comments. Here's the website again, and it's also on the one flyer that we have. But Jill Falcone, she's in the back corner right now. She's a member of our staff, and she's the individual who some of you may have seen make some presentations at the Morro Bay National Estuary Program this year. She's in charge of our clean water programs and stormwater management plan. But if any of the individuals, if you haven't already put questions on the cards and you would like to do so, just raise your hand. Jill can either get you cards, or she can also pick them up from you, so that then some of those questions will be asked later on. And then media representatives, will give them some time to ask questions and then conclude with questions and answers from your board of directors of the CSD. So on our staff introductions, the individuals will just sort of, before I get into the discussions with each of them, Mark Hutchinson is our Environmental Division Manager. John Waddell is a project engineer on the job. You know, these are really important people for me, so I'll let you clap for each of them individually, but for the most part, we're hoping that we can roll through the presentation and wait to the end. Yeah, no, these guys got my back, right? Courtney Howard And Courtney's our lead water resource engineer in the department. John Diodati, John's financial administrative analyst, and then he's also a franchise administrator, which covers things like our relationships with Charter, PG&E, and the utilities, the franchises that the county has with those private entities. Rosemary Gaglione, and I think a lot of people know Rosemary already. And Lisa Wallander. And Lisa is with our water quality lab, and she's a water quality chemist. Also, as quick introductions, we have John Beaton in the audience somewhere. And John is the head of our water quality lab. And I mentioned Jill Falcone is the back question, is in the back corner. And then Dean Benedix, who's in the corner back there, is the lead of our utilities operation, which covers the dams that we operate, Lopez and Santa Margarita, as well as all of our water and wastewater systems. And Dean will be involved in the assessment side of the project. That's a quick overview. There's a couple other high-level county officials here, but right now we're just going to introduce the people who are doing the work. I don't get it very often to take shots at the big guys, so I'll talking about Mark a little bit, why don't you hop up, Mark, because he's going to be the first one who participates here. And Mark is the head of our environmental division within the department. The environmental division was created by the Board of Supervisors in 2002, and it is probably the most significant change in the department since we were last working on the wastewater project in the late 1990s. Mark will go over what his division does, but essentially they've been very instrumental with our department efforts in order to move various projects forward, and we see them as being very important as well. He comes from Cal Poly, has prepared over 500 environmental documents, and played an instrumental role in the Twin Bridges project as well. This is just a really bad slide, but I wanted to show it anyhow. This is the org chart of the department, and so this is the environmental division. We have a number of different divisions. This is actually the Nacimiento project, which is a $170 million project that we're implementing with San Luis Obispo, Paso Robles, Templeton, and Atascadero. And so it's got a work that is significant in of itself. We've got administrative, finance, accounting. This is the utilities division that I mentioned Dean is in charge of. This is Mark's environmental. And then we've got construction, design. We've got development services, which is if people are going in to get building permits. Our development services essentially looks at the civil engineering aspects of the jobs. Then we've got our roads people, traffic and circulation, which Rosie is part of, and then our road maintenance crews. So in any case, Mark's a very important component of the department. And Mark, I think, well, this is some of the things that the program does, but I'm really going to let Mark now speak to the environmental programs within the department.
Well, I think the first thing to point out is that environmental guys, you can always tell we don't wear ties. But I notice Supervisor Lake Gibson doesn't have a tie either. Well, we do wear ties, but only when we're in trouble. Not there yet. This is Environmental Programs Division organization chart that you see on the board. We are a total of 7 staff members organized into 3 major work areas. On the left there, you see clean water programs. And then there's a lot of acronyms. But that's a countywide program that we run. Primarily, we watch what the state and federal government is doing in regards to clean water regulation and alert the various departments in the county as to what's coming down the road. We do have some recent successes, though. We're working cooperatively with state and federal governments, multiple agencies, to get remediation through federal Superfund money of a very bad situation in the North County that has to do with some mercury mines there. And it's been a successful effort so far, and we're making some really good connections with those agencies with the goal of getting things done within the county. On the far right, you see I have an environmental resource specialist and a public works worker. That's an interesting effort that we do, but that's focused on field work. Public Works Department builds many projects, maintains roads, and frequently we create environmental damage that has to be restored. So within our department, we actually do the hands-on restoration for most projects. It would be public works staff people growing those little oak trees, putting them in the ground, protecting them from the gophers, getting them going, and getting those sites put back together. We work very closely with the road maintenance guys to, put it candidly, try to keep them out of trouble. And they work very closely with us so that we don't violate any state or federal environmental regulations. And then there in the middle, I have three environmental specialists, and they are primarily engaged in supporting the activities of the Public Works Department. Sometimes people are surprised to find out that the county itself also has to get permits, just like you all have to get permits. And as you can imagine, if it's difficult to get a building permit from the county, what's it like to get a building permit or a permit from, say, 7 or 8 or 9 federal agencies to build a bridge over a wetland or a bridge across the end of Morro Bay? And that's what our division does. So we'll do everything from meet with the engineering group early on to talk about issues with the project. We work with project development to get the best mix of project that serves the need as well as respects the environment. We write the environmental documents, sometimes with consultant help and sometimes internally. We then work with regulatory agencies like EPA and the Regional Water Quality Control Board, Fish and Wildlife Service, Fish and Game, and others to make sure that those projects are done in a way that meets the requirements of all those state and federal laws. And then when it's built, back to the right side again, we go out and restore the site and keep it going. In a nutshell, that's what the Environmental Programs Division does on a daily basis.
Now Mark's going to walk through some of the project-specific responsibilities that he's going to be in charge of.
Boy, approval of environmental technical memorandums. One of the things we have to do as we work through this project and encounter environmental issues is we need to write down what the issue is and what the solution is or what the status is. And of course, those are recorded, posted on the websites. One of my responsibilities is to make sure that the information that's put down there is, in fact, the correct and true information the first time around. And of course, quality assurance, quality control, and environmental reports and documentation. I do work with my own staff. I also have a host of consultants on various types of contracts. And it'll be important that any environmental documents that we publish or release are accurate and consistent, meet the requirements of whatever standard we're working with. And I mentioned environmental consultants. Again, there are several. We take the lead with environmental consultants. They support us. They do work at our direction, not the other way around. Oh, hi, Lou. Certainly they do. And one of my key responsibilities is to keep the consultants on track and moving in the direction, answering the questions that we pose, and providing the information that we need in order to present to the community the true facts regarding environmental impacts or other environmental issues. And of course, I'll be a liaison with a portion of the technical advisory committee to the extent that there's a subgroup within that committee focused on environmental issues, then I'll be the staff liaison to that group, making sure they have the information and materials they need to do their job. And liaison with the county environmental coordinator. Now we're getting into bureaucracy. Within the county of San Luis Obispo, there are actually two environmental divisions. My division within Public Works, which is primarily an internal support division. As I mentioned, we work on Public Works projects. And you may have heard the term environmental coordinator. That's my ex-boss, runs an environmental division in the planning department. And we have between us an agreement on how we do things. And she and I meet on a regular basis and make sure that we're getting it right, at least as far as public works projects go. So that's my key role, is to keep her informed of what we're doing and how we're doing it.
Now I'm going to ask Mark a couple of questions. As I mentioned before, we've been getting postings on the website. In addition, we participated in the National Water Resource Institute's peer review of the Ripley Report. And one of the recommendations that came out of that peer report was that the county could consider an addendum to the environmental impact report on the project. And so I'd like Mark to explain the significance of that recommendation, also in context of some of the other terms that we've shown up on the screen.
Well, what we're talking about with the term addendum really is a technical term of art. It has to do with something called the California Environmental Quality Act, commonly pronounced CEQA, and that's the law that requires us to write environmental impact reports and related documents. And a question often comes up on a large project when you have an EIR completed and the project changes or the environment changes, what do you do? Do you start over? Do you do minor technical changes? And how do you go about doing that? One of the options open to agencies is something called an addendum, and that's typically reserved for minor, non-significant changes in either the project or things that are going on. You notice we have supplement is the next. And a supplement is essentially a new environmental impact report, except that it draws on all the information from all of the previous documents that may be out there. Now, the NWRI report does mention the idea of doing an addendum rather than a supplement, and I think what they're after is a cost and time saving. Looking at that, I think we have to say at this point that it's really very premature to make those kinds of decisions in the project. It's important to let the project or let the process respond to what the project needs rather than trying to maneuver the project so it fits any particular presupposed approach to it. That being said, there are at least three different EIRs already out there on the issue, depending on how you count them. Another way to count them would get you four. And when we do environmental impact reports, we're not limited to the information that we use. The only requirement is that it be accurate and up-to-date information. If it's true, it's true. If it's not, it's not. If it applies, it applies. If it doesn't, it doesn't. So the challenge would be to gather up everything that's out there, organize it in a way that makes sense and meets the requirements, the technical requirements of the law as we go through the process. Additional environmental efforts. I did want to touch on if you saw our chart in the back, as we go through this initial alternatives analysis, we will, to the extent possible, use existing documents, biological reports, cultural reports, and others that are still valuable and accurate. But there may be a need in order to have a level playing field to update a report or two here and there, and we would do that in advance of having the alternatives analysis completed. So I think I addressed on the timing assumption in our NWRI report. But this other document you may have heard of is something called a Notice of Determination, NOD. In the environmental business, we talk about those kinds of things a lot. We're used to seeing environmental impact reports, draft and final documents, and all those sorts of things. It's important to keep your eyes open for something called a Notice of Determination. That in itself is a one-page document, and then it's attached to something that runs another 150, 200 pages, typically. That's the decision document that the agency makes. So you may see EIRs come and go, but when you see a notice of determination, the agency has said, we're making our final determination, here's our findings of fact, this is what we're basing it on. Why is that important? Well, it's the last thing in the CEQA process before the agency lets it go. It also starts a very short appeal period. Typically, only 30 days from that notice being posted if someone has an objection to it. After that, it's considered a done deal. So notice of determination, also an important document.
And certain also there's NEPA, which is federal requirements associated with environmental review. We're not really going to address those issues tonight, focusing instead on some of the CEQA questions. In addition to environmental review associated with both NEPA and CEQA, there's also the CEQA, there's the permitting requirements associated with the project, and I'd like Mark to address the issue about the potential transfer of permits versus having to start over in obtaining permits for the project.
Well, I do want to say that in the environmental permit business, again, post-CEQA, but before construction happens, permit in hand, even if it's not the one you particularly want to use, is a very, very valuable item. So generically, we typically would not want to let a permit expire or die, even if we intend to change the project. Really a strong psychological benefit. A lot of what I do with other agencies is discuss the project. Certainly there's formal requirements, there's application forms, but it really comes down to a bottom line of trust and understanding and communication. Existing permits have a tendency to focus agencies on the issues at hand. So to the extent the generic issues that may apply to a project wherever it's located in a community are already addressed in an existing live permit, then you're that much farther ahead, and it can save time and money in whatever process that you're involved with. So from an onset, we would say, let's not let a permit expire. Let's not let it die. Let's keep it as long alive as long as we can, because it has value down the road in a number of different ways.
And on AB 2701 itself, in the development of that legislation, it sort of authorizes that permits can be transferred on the project. But what it didn't do is it didn't go to any step in terms of telling the permitting agencies what to do, that the permitting agencies still maintain their autonomy and their discretionary decisions associated with the project. Another environmental issue is the Coastal Commission, the Habitat Conservation Plan, General Plan Update, Water Management Plan. In the Coastal Commission's the Coastal Development Permit, in total there's more than 80 conditions, and there's a number that relate to secondary impacts, and Mark, if you could just generally discuss those as well.
Well, certainly, all of these things that you hear, habitat conservation plans, the things listed on the slide, have to do with, again, secondary impacts, which are impacts that, but for the project, would not occur. For instance, if we build a road, the road itself impacts the environment, cars come on the road, there's more traffic, more noise. A secondary impact would be, well, what if that road goes out in the country and then somebody wants to build houses? Now, the Coastal Commission, if they approve a wastewater plant, has to be concerned by law with the not just the impacts of pipelines and wastewater treatment plants and hooking up existing houses. It really goes to, well, what about the vacant lots? Now they can't be built on, but if we put in a wastewater plant, perhaps they could. So the commission has built into the permits that they've issued requirements to address other impacts that have to do with longer-term issues. Habitat conservation plan and a sterile plan update has to do with endangered species and how to deal with those, and certainly the issue of water supply to any new development that should result.
Thanks, Mark. And with respect to all the permitting agencies, whether Coastal Commission or the Regional Board, U.S. Fish and Wildlife, we've already started our meetings with the major permitting agencies. And the one comment that I want to throw out there is that everybody is being very cooperative right now, and I certainly appreciate the feedback from the permitting agencies. It gives us a little bit of a hope of optimism that the permitting process that we're going to be entering into, since we don't want to have to start from the beginning, the Coastal Commission, the depth of review that they've already done within the community and for the project, I think is going to help us a lot in being able to move forward. Last, one of the questions we're going to address in the process in terms of the project team presentation is the timing of the Prop 218 election. But right now, this is also similar to the poster board that Mark had in the back. But if you could explain those things that we see we have to do before the 218 work versus things that are post-Prop 218 work.
Well, what you see on the left is a very brief summary of the thing that we'll do before the 218 election. And as I mentioned before, we begin by taking all of the environmental documents that have been produced over the years. We review all of those, and we get down to detail in as much of the community as we know about. We begin to work with the engineering crew as they start looking through alternatives, and we communicate with them on the kinds of environmental issues that might result from various sites or types of treatment. The idea of our first work effort is to produce an environmental section to that alternative analysis document that gets produced and released to the public. We'll try to do that, as I said, with existing documents as much as possible. That is certainly an economic and time issue. We may have to supplement a few things here and there to update some studies. After the 218 election, that's when we really get down to the traditional environmental impact report process. And that follows after the community advisory election. We begin some kind of CEQA NEPA document, perhaps an addendum, perhaps a supplemental EIR. And that's the formal process that you see where there's a public review draft, there's written comments, written responses, ultimately leading through to the notice of determination that I talked about.
Thanks, Mark.
Is that the last one?
I think that's the last one, yeah.
Thanks.
Next individual that I want to introduce is John Waddell. And John is going to be our project engineer within the department. He also has a degree from Cal Poly in environmental engineering. And he's mostly been working on our design and construction projects, including bridges, water lines, wastewater facilities, and roads-related ones. And we certainly welcome him to this team as well. Some of his major project responsibilities are going to be assisting me in project management activities, including the ongoing updates to our scope, schedule, and budget reports to make sure that we stay on track, coordinating the departmental staff efforts together with the consultants. And then there's going to be a number of work efforts that he's going to be supporting on the engineering actions themselves. And some of them that he'll be talking about right now include approaches to construction management. Certainly because I had shown you that we have a construction division itself, we think that we have some options available as a public agency on construction management, as well as with more options on construction management, additional options on public contracting methods. And then John on the engineering stuff is going to be responsible for evaluating every single engineering technical submittal that comes through. And then last but not least, he's going to have the role with, similar to Mark, he's going to be a liaison as well with the Technical Advisory Committee itself. So John, this is sort of the
in our Water Resources Division and also in our Design and Construction Divisions. In fact, during my time in the Water Resources Division, some of the groundwater data that I collected has been used in recent reports by Cleith and Associates on project on Los Osos groundwater issues. My experience in design and construction has been primarily, I've been assigned most of the water and wastewater utility projects in the last few years. It's been a good experience in solving complex engineering problems and in working with people from a variety of backgrounds in challenging situations. The reason I chose work on this project, and I did get a choice, was this Los Osos project has really held my interest for a number of years, and I've followed along with the news reports and the newspapers, and I really feel for the residents of this community, and I'm committed to doing the best I can to help find a resolution to this.
Fast forward us to the construction phase. What do you think that the Public Works Department and the Construction Division have to offer that might benefit the project? And this is the last time I'm going to throw this bad slide up there. But essentially, this is the division that John transferred over from, which was our Construction Division.
Well, the county's Construction Division has a staff of construction managers, resident engineers, and inspectors that have a lot of experience and expertise in managing construction projects of all sizes, including some very large and complicated projects. They have the experience and knowledge also to perhaps consider some alternative contracting methods. One of those methods can be the breaking the collection system into several smaller contracts. The advantages of this would be that smaller to medium-sized and even local firms could bid on the project, and it would increase competition on the bids. Another option would be material price indexing, where during the bid advertising process, a set price would be established for certain materials that have really volatile cost associated with them. And by setting that price, we could reduce speculation and uncertainty in the bidding climate. And then a third option is the build, own, operate, transfer.
It's a little bit, our experience with our construction management, especially on large jobs like the Nacimiento project or our rebuild of Lopez Dam a couple of years ago, is that because we do have a fully staffed construction management division, it gives us more options than if we have to rely 100% on consulting project managers. And we're going to get into a little bit more of those benefits later on. But again, it's something that I think that the Public Works Department can help bring to the table to help move the project forward. What about the Orenco option? And I'm going to lead in on this a little bit because certainly that I understand that some people in the community understand what the Orenco option is and other people may not. But essentially what the Orenco option is it is under what John had mentioned, Government Code Section 5956 or this boot option. Orenco is a company that does construct step systems, and so there's a portion of their option that relates to a specific technology. There's also a portion of their option that really relates to contracting methods. And I guess this is probably a good time for me to clarify what our position is on the step system. I sort of answered some questions at the CSD meeting last week that said, well, if you want to know what our position is on step, then come to Monday night's meeting, because I was trying to draw people out here tonight and we have a good crowd, so I'm glad. But certainly step is going to be included in our alternatives analysis. And what I want to do is just sort of back up a little bit and compare our June 19th recommendation versus where we stand today. And I also think that this sort of illustrates that as we go down the path, that there is flexibility from the Public Works Department on how we address issues. And I think that we have to be prepared, too, to change as we move forward. But on June 19th, when our recommendation specifically stated that we wanted to look only at conventional gravity, there was another recommendation in there also that said we were going to look at all existing reports. And in moving forward, or part of the June 19th recommendations, is at that point in time we were sort of at the tip of the iceberg on looking at issues. And we were drawing in part based on last fall's near negotiations between the CSD and the state, where the CSD had indicated that they would go to gravity collection. So there was a basis for those recommendations. And then as we moved forward in the months that followed, a couple of things that we did. We started looking at those existing reports. We knew that STEP had already been evaluated to some extent, but as of June 19th, we really didn't know the details of those prior evaluations. In addition, the National Water Resource Institute in our review. Now, what is way too soon to say is how far is STEP going to go through the process? Is a STEP system going to be on the table at the end of the day once we get done evaluating? And it's just too premature to draw any of those conclusions. We haven't had the opportunity yet to get into the evaluation. But since June 19th, both feedback from the community as well as our review of existing reports and, of course, the expert opinions of some real notable industry experts has indicated that we do need to incorporate it into our alternatives analysis. We will be doing so. Whether it lasts the whole time and is a viable project alternative at the end of the day, or whether it gets screened out early, again, it's premature for us to draw any conclusions of that nature. But certainly STEP is an alternative that's on there. Also, just to make a side note, there's a couple of other important recommendations that we think came out of the NWRI peer report. And the other one is the priorities that they set. One of the basis of that peer review said, what is the primary challenge that's facing the community? What's the problem that needs to be solved? And it is a wastewater. It's the groundwater contamination that's occurring. And what NWRI said is that needs to be the number one thing that the county is looking at in trying to move these issues forward. That the other issues associated with primarily groundwater management, seawater intrusion, but the overall water management, that those are important issues also, but those are second to solving the wastewater problem. And what kind of guidance does that give us? Well, again, our work is going to identify a number of different project alternatives so that the community can look at those different alternatives. But one of them, we believe that the NWRI was correct, that we need to focus on a very simplified wastewater project. We want to make sure that all of the doors are left open for proper groundwater management and water management practices sort of at the back end. But we also need to think about just simplifying it. That over the last 10 years, the approach to the project has been trying to solve multiple items with one project. And that's a good goal, but has history shown us that maybe we're trying to bite off too much with one project? Maybe we just need to simplify it. So at least one of all alternatives will be looking at a very simplified project. We also think that benefits an equity issue, because to the extent that water management and how that moves forward, we are looking at very much working with the water companies. There's current groundwater litigations going on. I think that those could provide it. I think that it's just a good approach. It's a good recommendation out of the NWRI report that we will also be following as one of the options that we're going to be addressing. But I want to get back to John. The Aranco option itself is specifically the idea of privatization, whether it was Aranco or another private company. As he mentioned, Sacramento Regional used these 5956 to privatization for the development of their biosolids facility. But to the extent that Aranco is interested in what we're doing, John, maybe you can talk about contracting methods and how we see its benefits.
Well, sure. Well, as he said, the Aranco proposal is essentially a privatization option under the build, own, operate, transfer. And to the extent that outside private industry is interested in our project, that's only going to benefit our project. The more interest that is out there, just the more opportunities for a good solution to come forward. For example, as we're going through our alternatives analysis, we can compare and contrast cost estimates and design concepts that these private companies are proposing with alternatives that have previously been proposed that we're evaluating. Currently, that is our current task, is the alternatives analysis. Ultimately, if a treatment or a collection or any type of technology is chosen that would meet the services that a company like Aranco provided, at that time, then we could look at the contracting options available for like a build, own, operate, transfer or other type of option.
Thanks, John. And I think that's really important that right now we have to focus on technology alternatives, and it's down the road that we'll be looking at contracting methods specifically. The next individual I want to introduce is Courtney Howard, and Courtney is actually the individual who I'd been working most closely with in the department until this year on the water management side, regional efforts. Courtney also has a bachelor's degree from an environmental engineering, same time as John does, and has been doing a lot of our water system master planning and groundwater programs. Currently, she's in charge of a groundwater banking evaluation up in the Paso Basin, and that was based on a grant that we received from the Department of Water Resources, an IRWM grant. She's also done master planning for Cayuca, Santa Margarita, Shandon, and there's probably in the airport area of San Luis Obispo. So I kind of touched on it. Countywide master water plan, that's her effort. But she's a liaison with the County Planning Department on the resource management system, and I think that there's a number of people in the room that are eagerly awaiting the resource capacity study from the Planning Department. And Planning Department is also doing an update to the conservation element of the general plan, and Courtney is working with them as well. And lastly, with the County Agricultural Department on ag policies and how they relate to water resources. Project responsibilities, we see a strong relationship with the Integrated Regional Water Management Plan, Propositions 50, and the newly approved Proposition 84, and she's going to assist in some of the public communications that we have up front. So, Courtney, your two focus areas are Countywide Master Water Plan and Integrated Regional Water Management Plan, and I know what they are, but maybe you can help explain to everybody here what they are and what do they mean to Los Osos.
Okay, well, the Master Water Plan is going to look at countywide water resources on a supply and demand basis, both a snapshot of what things look like now and into the future, and then also identify some projects or programs that we recommend might assist with addressing shortfalls in supply versus demand. And then the document will also go into how the Master Water Plan relates to other planning documents and efforts. That's one of my big goals, is to work closely with the Planning Department to make sure we're saying the same things and all the documents that are out there are consistent, and especially with policies and with regard to water resources. And then there's the other side of it is the Integrated Regional Water Management Plan, which identifies sustainable water resource programs and policies in an attempt to integrate management of water resources in five different areas, not only supply, but looking at ecosystems, water quality, groundwater, and flood control. And that's also, it matches the state model for their water plan. And so what do those two documents mean for Los Osos? Well, the jurisdiction really has the ultimate choice whether or not to implement any of the recommendations in those plans. And, you know, two things, the AB 2701 only transferred the wastewater project, not water, so it's ultimately up to the CSD and the other water agencies as far as if they want to take any of those recommendations. And then as far as I know, Los Osos wasn't planning to import water, so if, you know, that policy change in the future, those documents might be available as a resource. But the other aspect of the integrated regional...
Importing water is really part of the regional countywide master water plan. And importing water, I sort of wet my teeth in the early 1990s in the county on the State Water Project, which was a controversial project in its day at the time. And so we're going to stay away from importing water discussions tonight here because we know there's other challenges to be addressed. But with respect to sustainability and how that works into the Integrated Regional Water Management Plan and the grant revenues, I think it does warrant a little bit of additional discussion. As Courtney mentioned, the IRWM plan is now the state's model for water resources throughout the state. Last year, I was up in Sacramento, and I was listening to some presentations by some of the deputy directors of the Department of Water Resources. And what they had essentially done is they admitted they threw up their arms, that the state was no longer capable of doing master water planning for the entire state. And so what they were doing is they said that the regions, the different regions, need to develop regional plans and that we need to inform the state of what our water needs are. And she mentioned that the state model is built not any longer based purely on supply, but also water quality, ecosystem, groundwater management, and flood control measures. So it is something that we've been working on. Last fall, I think I did the presentation to the CSD Board of Directors and got the endorsement for the countywide regional plan on IRWM, and I'm sure that part of it was based on the sustainability model that's included in it. So, Courtney, maybe you can speak to sustainability, I got to take some of the hot notes, and then she gets to address some of the better side of it, I guess. Sustainability has been used in the community, we've noted, you know, in the recent past, in certain contexts, and especially with respect to energy. And energy is an important issue in addressing sustainability and how to move forward on projects. But sometimes there's competing interests when it comes to the sustainability model. Sometimes energy and the use of energy in one technology competes with water quality. So if we're looking at sustainability from an energy cycle, certainly we want to minimize the amount of energy that's used in a technology. But sometimes energy brings us better water quality. And so in the sustainability model, sometimes there's trade-offs. There's other things that are just simply never trade-offs, and that's like water conservation. To the extent that we can do good jobs in conserving water, then that's always a benefit for the sustainability model. But that was kind of my lead-in, and Courtney, maybe you can, you know, talk a little bit more about
economic vitality, as well as our social characteristics and the different values that we have as a, you know, in individual communities. And so I think that's where the challenge lies, is in identifying these programs and policies to sustain our resources while weighing each balance, you know, with each community's values. So I think that's one of the biggest challenges. And then within the regulatory environment, what, you know, the laws guiding what we can actually implement as far as programs and policies to sustain our natural resources. So that's kind of how the Integrated Water Management Plan seeks to identify those projects and in that balance. And then I'll go into the grants.
Yeah, and I just sort of wanted to end it on the note of sustainability, is that we do recognize that based on the level of discussions in the community, that sustainability is also an important portion of what we need to be addressing in the development of project alternatives. With respect to water resource grants, then?
Yeah, I think it'll make it pretty competitive as far as our integrated regional water management plan. The two grants listed here, Proposition 50 and 84, we will be competing with other counties for a certain amount of money, and that's a high priority for the state, is to see state sustainability addressed in the integrated regional water management plans. And so we have two rounds in Proposition 50. The first round, unfortunately, we weren't awarded a grant, but in 2007 there will be another funding cycle that We'll go through the process of, again, identifying top priority projects that we want to apply for grants for. And then recently, Proposition 84 was also passed through the state, and so we have yet to see how they're going to administer that in their timeline. But according to the language of the proposition, they will require an integrated regional water management plan for the funding that's allocated to the Central Coast. I don't know if you can see that, but it's all the way from Santa Cruz down to Santa Barbara, so all those counties and their different plans will be competing for the grant money. And then another opportunity is through the Department of Health Services. They've been allocated a certain amount of money for grant funding.
Thanks,
so
Courtney. Sure. And I guess on the grant funding, one of the important things is that they are very competitive. And we have to develop work that will compete not just within the Central Coast, but in some cases compete against projects in other areas. Up at the state, one of the things is showing our faces. We can sort of agree to disagree on various issues, but can resolve to move the efforts forward together, then the ability to compete for grants will be enhanced. Next individual I want to introduce is John Diodati. And John has franchise and finance administration, and he worked on some of our recent assessment districts. Also a graduate of Cal Poly and one of our master's degree holders, and recently comes to us from the USDA, U.S. Department of Agriculture, where he worked on some grant programs there. He's a member of our finance and administration. I showed the org chart, but I promised I wasn't going to throw it up there again. In total, we have 12 accountants and finance officers, including three CPAs, that provide a depth for being able to look at financial issues and pursue grants. And John, you were recently involved in the flood control zone 1 and 1A assessment vote, which obtained about 85% of the property owner support in that election. It was a Prop 218 election. And maybe you can do a little bit of comparison and contrast for us. Talk a little bit about what the 1 and 1A project was, but do some comparison and contrast for us.
Earlier this year, I did administer a Prop 218 election in the community of Oceano in a district called Flood Zone 1 and 1A. They actually have levees down there for flood control, and in 2001, the levee breached, and there was a need to find additional funding to continue appropriate maintenance of the facility so we could have a continued level of service, appropriate service for the facility. Pablo mentioned 85%. The actual number was 89.16% of the return ballots were in support of the proposed assessment, which is an exceptionally high number for a property assessment election. And knowing that we were going to do an election here in Los Osos, the obvious question to ask is, why were we so successful in Oceano? What were some of the keys to the success? And the obvious answer is that we made it our number one priority to have this be a consensus-driven process where we had a very transparent and informative public campaign to disseminate information into the community. And through that, and through showing our commitment to that, building voter equity as we led up to the election. The way it worked in Oceano was there was project alternatives that were established, and they had various levels mandated recommended alternative, and that led up to the election, and we have that 89% support. So Pablo asked me to share some similarities and differences that I found between the two, Oceano and Los Osos, and the first one is that the election preceded the final decision on the use of the funds. In Oceano, there were the numerous alternatives. We had a recommendation from the advisory group, but going into the election, there was not a final determination. And that, as you'll see in a really nice slide later, is going to be the same process in Los Osos. There were also numerous various alternatives and costs associated with the projects. They were all established. They're all reviewed. And the one that balanced the affordability and the level of service that was acceptable was the ultimate one that was chosen. And then lastly, pertinent information was disseminated throughout the entire project, and I think that's going to be true in Oceano. The key here is communication. We found that by staying true to our word and keeping in close contact with the community, that we kept the voter base informed and they were able to make an informed decision. Some differences is that in Oceano there was a known state transfer. If the Prop 218 election failed, the state of California was going to maintain the facility and assess the community at whatever rate they expensed the project at, and that that was known. I, over at my booth, I had a lot of questions about what happened to the failed Prop 218 election here, and currently that's unknown. And then another difference is that Oceano had the existing facility while this is a completely new construction.
Thanks, Sean. And I guess that difference also is a significant issue. When we look back, we had a Prop 218 vote in 2000 on the Lopez Dam seismic remediation project for the Five Cities area. That Prop 218 vote was a little bit different. It wasn't a vote of property owners. It was a vote, it was a special tax. And it required two-thirds voter approval, and we got about 70% voter approval on that, and that measure passed in 2000. Similarities, again, were that it was a consensus-oriented process, but again, in that situation, it was an existing facility, and here in Los Osos, where there's not an existing facility, certainly that brings itself some unique and certainly sizable challenges. John Courtney spoke a moment ago about state grant revenues. You previously worked with the USDA performing grant analysis on federal programs. Maybe you can speak to that as well as...
First is a community-wide approach where Los Osos as a community, usually the median household income is used as the benchmark, and it can be compared to the rest of the state of California to determine where they fall as far as their income level. And a grant can be given to the entire project, which would offset the total project cost, which would benefit the entire community. The other way is to look at it on an individual basis, and within the community of Los Osos, which has an established median household income, there's individuals with varying levels of income within the community, very, very low, very, very affluent. The individual approach is to look at those individuals with a very, very low income and find them some sort of low-income loan or grant to assist them in a project, a part of the project that's impacting them personally. So we're aware of both of those funding scenarios, and it's our goal to seek viable funding solutions for either of those situations. The Water Resources Development Act, known as WRDA, this is an example that would benefit the entire community. I spoke with Lois Kapp's office earlier this week, and they believe that the $35 million grant for general construction is still on the table. Since 2002, they've been trying to get this authorized on the WRDA Act. The Act hasn't passed the Congress since 2002. They've said that in 2007, this is a top priority for her office. We're going to know more here after the first 100 hours of Congress. I'm going to continue to talk to her office and make sure that this continues to be a top priority for them.
And on WRDA itself, I think it's important to note that the current administration, the president, has held a solid position since he's been in office for no new funding for water resource projects through WRDA. We know that just recently, as a result of the elections, that Congress is changing, and we know that Senator Boxer is on the Environmental and Public Works Committee, and so there is some hope that changes in the federal level will provide for opportunities. But again, the existing administration hasn't authorized any new fund or has not appropriated any new funding for water resource development projects, and hopefully the new Congress will help make changes at the federal level that will make those opportunities open up.
The old agency I worked for could possibly look to defer costs or defray costs for these individuals. So long-term goals, they're not very that long-term off, so I don't know why I put that there, but Lois Kapp's office, I'm going to continue to talk with her when they return from Christmas break. Her office will know more about the first 100 hours of Congress and where WRDA stands, and we'll continue to speak with them. The Ferguson Group is a federal lobbyist that is a new resource for the county, and they're going to be in D.C. looking at both community and individual funding issues or funding programs for to address affordability. And lastly, in the beginning of the year, we're going to have a federal, state, and local funding roundtable where we bring in all the federal, state, and local players and start establishing programs and possibilities to address affordability.
Thanks, John. And I just wanted to, all this, I'm not going to go over this slide, but this is the handout that John had created, and hopefully everybody's been able to grab it. Obviously, the Prop 218 election is one of the primary issues on everybody's mind. We have some target dates to be in front of the Board of Supervisors later on this year. And then John also put together some commonly asked questions on the backside relating to Prop 218. And so I wanted to make sure that everybody knew that this was in a flyer format and thank John for putting that together. Obviously, his experience with USDA is a benefit both to the Public Works Department on our projects as well as the county as a whole. The final two individuals are probably going to go a little bit quicker here. And Rosie is going to come up, and she's one of our transportation project manager engineers, also a environmental engineering grad from Cal Poly. But it's just really one question, and that is that Rosie's been here in the community for quite some time, really more than anybody else from the Public Works Department over the last several years, and so has had the opportunity, you know, to listen more over time as far as issues that exist. And so it's just sort of an open-ended question on what should we be considering in our upcoming efforts, and what have you heard?
Well, I've heard a few things. Basically, I had a call from a woman who was very concerned. She says, I've heard that you guys, the county, you're just rubbing your hands and you're all excited because now you're going to get all the roads in Los Osos paved and have the project pay for it. Mostly concerned with our arterials and roads that have been newly paved. Those are roads that we would be pretty firm about having them in great condition again. And then we have roads that we've actually had on a list to overlay for a long time. And so if that's the case, then we're going to go to a lower standard of repair when they're done, and then we're going to go ahead and go in and make them nice the way we've been waiting to do while the project is being worked on. The other thing that I've heard is that perhaps the county just wants to take a dive on this so we can get out of doing the project. And that is just crazy. I just want to tell you, we've got people up here. Pablo doesn't like to lose. Failure is not one of his favorite things. None of these people, these are all really competitive and talented individuals, and none of them wants a failure in their career, because you have to understand, if 218 doesn't go through, we failed, I think, to bring something to the community that they want to jump on board and go with. Corolo Engineering, I mean, they do not want a failure attached with their name either. So I can tell you, I mean, I've been talking to you folks for a long time that there is a genuine desire to go ahead and find something that everybody can get on board with, that's the right thing to do, and that all of these people up here and the people that you're going to hear from later are completely committed to actually getting a project on the table and getting it built. So,
thanks, Rosie. And certainly the last individual who we've asked, and actually Lisa was probably the one who was the one who it was most sort of a volunteer type of a basis. Everybody else has got some sort of a role with the project at some point in time, and I felt it was important that, you know, the team that is working on the project come in and discuss the issues that we've come to learn so far. Lisa is with our water quality lab. She also has a master's degree. Wastewater analysis, regulatory compliance, and it's for many systems. It's our water systems, our wastewater systems, but then some of the other agencies who don't have water quality labs also utilize the services of our water quality lab that Lisa works on. Lisa's been a resident of Los Osos since 1983, a homeowner since 1987, and as a water quality professional who lives here in the community of Los Osos, thanks for participating today. And
more directly, but I want to get this right. I care too much about this. You've heard a lot of technical stuff so far, and there's a lot more to come. This project has a lot of technical challenges to address, and we all know that. But we also know that this project has a human side as well, and that's what I will touch on tonight. I'm a technical person, too, and I can talk from my head right along with my colleagues. But tonight, I will talk from my heart with a message that is informed by my technical background. As Paavo indicated, I've worked in the drinking water and wastewater field for 17 years. I've worked mainly as a bench chemist at the County Water Lab, but I also support operations in a variety of ways, including technical support and regulatory compliance. Also, as Paavo mentioned, I'm a resident of this community. I've lived here since 1983, and I've been a homeowner since 1987. I love this place. I think all of us here do. That's why we're here. And that's where the human, the heart issues come in. There's nowhere else I'd rather be. I've chosen to stay here through all the ups and downs of this issue and the possible problems that it could cause for me personally. As a resident and homeowner here, I have followed this issue for 23 years and counting. And through those years, I've experienced many of the same hopes, disappointments, and fears as everyone else who lives here. We all know that this project has a long, convoluted history, and I have no interest in getting bogged down discussing or debating any particular aspect of that history. In preparing for tonight, I reviewed several resources, including old technical reports, new technical reports, blogs, and other items, and I became exhausted. I don't want to continue to revisit the past. What's done is done. I realize it's a wise person who learns from history, and we cannot and should not forget ours. I'm not suggesting that. However, the way I see it, we can choose to live in the past, or we can choose to work for a better future for ourselves. I think we need to stop blaming each other, stop pointing fingers, get our house in order, and move forward toward the best solution that we can salvage from this sad situation. Our community has been torn apart by this issue, and that is one of the saddest parts, and it faces many more challenges ahead. As I said, I've experienced both hope and fear around this issue, and I still group regarding this issue, and everything I've heard has given me real hope for our future, more hope than I have had in years. Mixed in with that hope, however, are some fears that remain, including the prospect of this project being unaffordable to many of us, myself included. I also fear the possibility that disagreements in this community, with each other, with the county, and with the state, will prevent progress toward a solution, and that ultimately the consequences will be even worse if we don't address this problem now. That's a risk I don't want to take. The best way that I can see to allay those fears is for all members of our community, especially our various community leaders, to find a way to work with each other and with the county to move this project forward in a positive way. I don't by any stretch of the imagination think that's going to be an easy thing to do. There will continue to be differences of opinion on many things. I know that in many cases the divide is great, and the challenge to work together may seem impossible. But as far as I can see, that is our only way out of this situation. All of us, myself included, will have to let go of some of the ideas that we've held on to around this project. We need to find common ground, areas where we can agree and build on that. There's been references tonight to consensus building, and I couldn't agree more with that approach. I really don't want Los Osos to be known as the only community in California where the state had to come in and build a sewer for us because we couldn't agree to work together toward a solution. We know that isn't a given, but my understanding is it's a possibility, and that is one of those fears that I harbor. I would much rather we be known as the community that overcame its problems and found a way to work together to make the best of a very difficult situation. And I think we can do that. I have confidence in us. I would prefer that we be a positive model for others rather than a model of how not to do things. And that is completely up to us, No one else is going to come in and make this any better for us than it is now. I share Bruce's optimism, and I thank him for expressing that, and thank you for listening.
Issue for your community. So thanks everybody for participating tonight, and we're going to make our quick transition into part two of the team presentation, and a couple of us are going to stay up here as well. So thanks again. Again, as a quick reminder, if anybody has questions that you want to put on the index cards, if you have them or not, go ahead and raise your hands. Jill will come around, either get you a card or grab your cards from you. And then those individuals of our county staff who just walked down will be going through the index cards and picking out the toughest questions to pose back to the project team. This portion of the presentation will go quicker. As I mentioned earlier, as staff, we believe it's our ability to identify issues. And so in our early work on the project in the last couple months, that's what we've been doing, is we've been identifying issues and trying to see those. And the alternatives analysis, though, is something then that our consulting team is going to walk us through. Lou Corella is the Corolla Engineers Project Manager. Lou and I have worked on different projects for well over 10 years. Now. I mentioned in the early days of State Water, he did some of the designs on the Chorro Valley Pipeline. But the biggest project that we ultimately worked on was co-managing the Lopez Seismic Remediation Project. And I think that's an important project to note, because that project itself, the technology that was used was an alternative technology that was approved by the regulatory agency, in that case, the Division of Safety of Dams of California, first time ever that the method of construction, we had to really fight in order to get the Division of Safety of Dams in order to approve that technology, and Lou was certainly instrumental in those efforts. Has a wonderful resume of working on large municipal projects. I mentioned those other items, and so without any further ado, Lou.
This is Ford.
Thank you, Pavel. I wanted to mention that Corolla brings a lot of resources to this project. Just as you saw, the county's team brings a lot of resources to this project. And one of the key technical individuals on our team is going to be Carl Hadler, sitting behind me. He'll be the project engineer for the alternatives analysis. And Carl's background fits very nicely with this project. His 12 years of experience in wastewater system planning, the alternatives analysis phase. What are we going to be doing in the next 9 months, 12 months, 16 months on this project? If we simplify things, we're going to be doing a lot of things. But as we like to simplify it, we're going to be looking at developing potentially viable project alternatives based on previous reports and evaluations. There's been a lot of work done out there, starting in the early 90s, the work that was done in the early 2000s, the Ripley report, the peer review. All of those will be part of the consideration for the alternatives as we look at the various components of this project. Sometime at the end of 2007, November, as we saw the timeline, there will be a Prop 218 vote on the viable project alternative funding. What's important for us in the alternatives analysis to bring to that effort is the information that's needed by the community, by the TAC, by the County Board of Supervisors to understand what the cost impacts are of the alternatives available for this project and the assessment engineering that goes along with that. So the basis of the Prop 218 vote will be the assessment benefit cost engineering that's done. Our work will feed into that part of the project. And then ultimately, if the Prop 218 election passes, there will be a considerable effort between November and sometime in the summer of 2008, where we will provide the due diligence and provide additional information to the community on the specific technical issues of the remaining alternatives that, and then the community will vote on at that time for a preferred alternative for the project that will then go to the County Board of Supervisors for consideration. This graphic here just kind of reiterates a little bit of what I just spoke of the phases of the project, but where we are is in the orange dot on the left. AB 2701 is effective beginning January, and that's the official start date of our efforts, though we have been doing a considerable amount of work to date on a number of parts of the project. We'll be doing a rough screening of the potentially viable project alternatives that will be out to the back to the county staff and by mid-February. So in the first 6 weeks, we have to have the matrix of potentially viable project components available to the county for its review. And then in April, of those four, there are a number of alternatives that can be mixed and matched into a project alternative. And as a result, it will be our job to identify the components, put them in front of the Technical Advisory Committee, allow them to do their due diligence in terms of the pro and cons, evaluate the pro and cons of the various combinations of those components, and to develop the alternatives that will eventually be used to develop the cost estimates for the Prop 218 election. As you can see there, the blue flag shows the Prop 218 election taking place at the end of 2007 in November. Following the Prop 218, there'll be a due diligence process where we look to further refine the viable project alternatives and where we work with the environmental communities, the landowners, the regulatory permitting agencies, and the funding agencies. When we go to them, we say, we believe we've got project alternatives. The community has supported it with the 218 election. Tell us what you're going to be looking for as we move forward into a specific project alternative. That due diligence will put more meat on the bones of the alternatives, at which time, in sometime of summer of 2008, we'll be going out to the community with two or three specific project alternatives in an advisory election that, again, that advisory vote goes to the County Board of Supervisors for their consideration. Pablo, do you want to say anything about this?
Thanks, Lou. Maybe I can borrow this real quick. You know, I think that there's a couple of points that I sort of want to make sure to bring out right now. One is that this process is the same type of process that we recently used, as John Diodati had explained, in our 1 and 1A. But the question, you know, that's already come up is the timing of the Prop 218 vote right here. Why not just delay the Prop 218 vote until further? And I guess the best way of sort of posing that question really is that there's a couple of things. One is the Prop 218 vote itself, it's a funding vote. It is, do the property owners authorize us to use the value of their property, put liens on the property in order to help fund the project? And does everybody know that the county will really implement one of those alternatives that's within that viable projects alternatives report? But that's where this process works well, and it's an efficient process if we're allowed to develop it on a consensus approach. And the idea, though, is that our work, and we believe that the efficiency of the process and the need to follow a consensus-oriented process is important right now. But this final viable project alternatives report will go to the Board of Supervisors and will be a subject of the hearing with the board prior to us asking them for direction on the Prop 218 vote itself. So what it really amounts to is that's our challenge. How is it that we're going to develop a viable project alternatives that we can say, hey, it's going to be one of these three alternatives or one of these four alternatives? How well can we do that and get community confidence that that is going to be one of the projects that will be put on the table? And so, you know, the challenge of having a very credible process is a huge challenge that's on us right now. But the point is that the board is going to have a hearing on that process before directing us on a 218. And if we do a good job, then that hearing should be good. If we don't do a good job, then that hearing is going to be more challenging. And so we recognize that this is a big challenge. But there's another side of the coin, too, is that if this formal Prop 218 vote occurs after a project is selected, then if we recall Mark Hutchinson's process and what can be done before a Prop 218 vote and what can be done after a Prop 218 vote, if the Prop 218 vote is deferred until after a project is selected, then all of those CEQA requirements are going to kick in sooner. And our time to get to the 218 vote is going to increase, and the county's costs of getting to a 218 vote are going to increase. And one of the big challenges that we have in the Public Works Department is recognizing that in working for the county, we're having to balance our desire to move forward on helping resolve an issue in Los Osos, but also recognizing that there's countywide taxpayers who are concerned about how much money the county is spending on these efforts prior to the Prop 218 vote. This is one of those challenging issues. This process has worked before. It's a consensus-oriented process. But again, when we come up here and talk to you today about what the process, we recognize the challenge associated with it, the burden on us to do a good job. And essentially, these decisions, though, will not ultimately be made by the Board of Supervisors until we've had the hearing on viable project alternatives. So at least all this front work that we're doing over the next
process throughout the alternatives analysis and development of alternatives. And then, of course, in the preparation for the community advisory vote, there'll be a lot of opportunities for public presentations of the final potential viable alternatives, so there's a clear understanding of just what those alternatives are that you'll be voting on. At this point, I would like to hand it over to Carl to go through some of the details of the alternatives analysis work.
Thank you. Lou took a look at the schedule, and now I'd like to take a more detailed look at the process involved in developing viable project alternatives. And when I say viable, I mean alternatives that are fundable, permittable, and constructible in a reasonable period of time. That's the objective of this analysis. As Lou mentioned, we've used this on several projects. The most recent one I've been involved with is Incarnation, Washington, a similar community, a little smaller, on septic systems, who had to develop a collection system, a treatment process, and a disposal system. So we have used this process, we've tested it, but it will be used here. The first step, I guess, is reviewing the existing reports with a fresh look. And as Lisa said, there are a lot of reports. I can't decide whether it's helping me sleep at night or giving me insomnia. But we're reviewing those reports in detail to look at the existing evaluations of the components, because those feed into the next step of the process, what we call rough screening. Rough screening will look at the potential sites, treatment alternatives, collection system, and reuse or disposal alternatives that are viable. Once we have completed rough screening and developed that matrix of components, we take those components. The draft report is given to the Technical Advisory Committee for a pro-con evaluation. That is turned back over to us, and we develop a final report of the potential viable alternatives. And as I said, the final result is viable alternatives that are permittable, fundable, and constructible in a reasonable period of time. Those alternatives go to the Prop 218 vote.
if that passes, we continue the process with due diligence, environmental review, and value engineering. Due diligence includes looking at SRF funding, regional board, and coastal commission permits. Continued environmental review of those viable alternatives, and value engineering. Finally, that results in a community advisory vote on those existing viable alternatives.
So just to conclude, there's going to be some significant activity by the project team in the next 7 months till July, till we have an opportunity to bring to the county staff and the Board of Supervisors the list of viable project alternatives. And those key issues, as Carl has mentioned and has been mentioned before, are going to circle around the site alternatives, the collection system alternatives, recognizing that gravity vacuum systems are an option. Step stag is also an option back on the table. Treatment technologies, regional solids consideration, something we haven't talked much about tonight, but will be a key component of the treatment process, and also effluent management.
I'm going to wrap it up here with a couple of quick slides, but on the regional solids consideration, what that basic concept is that we know with AB 885 and some other septic management that's going to be required on a statewide basis, that there is no system within San Luis Obispo County that currently will expose by handling solids from other areas. Now, we know that there's controversy associated with that, and the idea is that there's potential benefits with it, and ultimately, again, what our job on this project is simply to provide your community with options. Maybe it's an idea that just isn't going to pan out, it doesn't pencil out, it doesn't make sense, it doesn't have community acceptance, but the idea is maybe it does. Maybe it's something that will help reduce the cost of a project to the community, and maybe the other concerns can be mitigated. We don't know, but the idea is we think that options need to be looked at, again, and options provided to the community. But whether or not it ends up being a good idea for this community or not is sort of remains to be seen. The last two items that I want to go over are the technical advisory committee itself. There is an action item on tomorrow's board agenda to adopt the bylaws, essentially create the technical advisory, but there's only one appointment that we're recommending, and that's the district engineer, Rob Miller. Obviously, Rob's got a significant history with the project. We think that he's going to be very important to participate in the process itself, and those recommendations also pay for his time to be on the technical advisory committee, because certainly we recognize that there's finance issues that the district has to deal with, and so part of our project budget is going to pay for the district's engineer to help us out. Future appointment of membership, there will still need to be a chair, three individuals to fill the engineering or water management slots, three environmental, and three finance. The application period for those other memberships are going to be through the end of January. If this action is adopted by the board tomorrow, then we'll have notices in the newspapers for four consecutive weeks. We'll make sure that there's applications out there for everybody to apply. But ultimately, all of those memberships are all of those appointments are made by the Board of Supervisors. And in terms of our work in screening through the different applications, certainly we're going to work with your new supervisor, Bruce Gibson, in order to work in the consideration of who our recommendations are going to be. I've already spoken to the issue of diversity of opinions that exist in the community. We do believe that the Technical Advisory Committee would be well-suited and lend to an objective process if it's a balanced Technical Advisory Committee. But again, it's the Board of Supervisors that makes all of those appointments. property owners and the business leaders within the community provide advisory votes on what projects should be preferred. Now, in a consensus-oriented process and with diversity of opinions on a technical advisory committee, if it so happened that we developed a project alternative that all of a sudden developed consensus and a lot of support behind one, then that's the ideal of all worlds. But we just didn't want to put that task on the technical advisory committee. Instead, say, hey, we need an objective pro-con analysis, and diversity of opinions can certainly help us do that. Lastly, on the project management plan, this is part of my job. These nine different points, which I won't go into a lot of detail. PSMJ, I'm not sure how many of you may have heard about it, but it's an organization, it's a nationwide organization, and it's one of the primary training organizations for the architectural and for the engineering and architectural industry in the United States. PSMJ does a lot of training. When I was consulting is when I first started participating in PSMJ training classes. But these are the nine components to a project management plan, and one of the nine things that I have to take the greatest care in making sure, not just to look at the outset, but to continue to look at over time. A vision, critical success factors. Certainly, we believe that the community of trying to develop a consensus on a project is going to be very important. Issues such as sustainability are important. Issues such as solid handling and odor are important issues. Issues associated with affordability are ultimately extremely important. There is the possibility, obviously, that a project could be built and it's still going to impact the affordability for some or many people in the community. And I personally don't see this. We can get a project built. It's not going to be successful in my mind if we can't substantially mitigate the affordability issues. But that is a challenge that I'm not, you know, we can make promises right now of doing the best possible job that we can for your community, but in terms of mitigating cost impacts and stuff, we can only promise to do our best job, and that's what we will be doing. Scope, schedule, and fiscal. We haven't talked at this meeting about how we're going to approach the fiscal analysis on it. Certainly, that's all going to be done. We're going to have a lot of public communications. But the bottom line is, when it comes to the different alternatives, what's it going to mean in terms of a monthly bill? What's it going to mean in terms of assessment? There's really bottom line numbers that we have to boil everything down to in comparing the alternatives on an apples-to-apples basis. Project team roles and responsibilities. One of the reasons why we're having the meeting tonight is Lou and Carl are in town. And Mark Hutchinson talked about when we do our technical memorandums, we'll make sure to get those on the website as soon as possible as well. Quality control plan, that's where county staff, we're the ones who are responsible for the quality control on this project. We rely on consultants for a lot of their expertise in helping us with addressing alternatives, but we're still the ones who bear the responsibility for quality control. The communication plan itself, haven't touched a lot. We plan on sending out a lot of mailers on the different topics, a lot of, you know, having some town hall meetings, the technical advisory committee. When it's appropriate, we'll also be coming back to the and attending CSD board meetings like we did last week. But the communication plan itself will have a lot of different components. We think that the mailers and what we send to you in writing to your homes is going to be one of the critical portions of it. And we recently grabbed a couple of Cal Poly graphic communication interns to help us do that because they're pretty talented people up there at Cal Poly. Change management plan, that's one of the topics I just briefly talked on early. And the important part of change management is understanding that while we walk through this process, we have to be open to the idea of change. It's principal development is on a consensus-oriented approach. And I mentioned that we're going to have the board hearing on viable project alternatives before seeking any direction on a 218 vote. But still, as we go down the weeks and the months, we have to continually evaluate, okay, are we taking the proper approach on this? Do we need to reconsider certain things? Certainly, the step evaluations and what we have done is an example of change management that we've recognized. Risk management plan, sometimes that has to do with more of the technical aspects of like construction risks and wanting to make sure that we have a safe work environment. And then client care is often the side from the A&E, the private firms, in terms of taking care of their clients. But in Los Osos' case, you know, we do, the Public Works Department, we consider the community of Los Osos, you know, to be our client. We live here. Lisa and the others spoke. You know, one of the reasons why I wanted the individuals I work with to come up and talk a little bit tonight as well is because, you know, the county is not really a faceless bureaucracy. The county employs people who live in the communities. They work on community issues. And the reason why I know I'm employed in government and many of the people who I work with are employed in government is because we care about the communities that we live in. And we're part of local government, and we do think it's very important. Board of directors of the CSD to ask questions. So, Jill, I think that you've compiled some of the cards that have been posed by the audience, and I think you have a mic there that you can pose those cards. See, this is the fun part of her job, because now she gets to put us on the spot. And what I guess I would propose to do is probably spend about 10 minutes on this so that we can transfer into the press questions and then leave plenty of time for the CSD Board of Directors to ask us questions as well.
So are you ready, Pavel?
I hope so.
Okay, we have a lot of really good questions here, and most of them are about the 218.
Okay.
So we'll start out with those. Okay, the first one is, why do you have to have the Prop 218 election before the advisory election?
Okay, so this gets back to this chart that Lou had identified, and then I talked to a little bit. And the idea is that, you know, sort of on a legal basis, the Prop 218 does not have to absolutely come first. But if we work a different process, then what happens is the 218 comes after we do a whole lot of other work. It increases the time, and time is a sensitive issue also because of the pending CDOs. But ultimately, it's this balancing act. If ideally, what would I want as a public works department? I would want to be able to lay out all of the alternatives, do all the environmental review on all the alternatives, have a community, you know, make a selection, do a lot of work, but I have a limited budget that I can work in. And this issue in the community is one that is that balancing act of when can we get to a Prop 218 vote, and how do we do so in a consensus-oriented process? And again, the challenge on us is when we get to that board hearing in August with our viable project alternatives, have we sort of met the bar that we've set for ourselves? So it's not a legal requirement. It's part of the process. It's a consensus-oriented process. And hopefully it's going to work out. But, you know, task number one is to work on the alternatives. And then we'll see how it goes.
Great. Your next one is a two-part question.
Uh-oh.
What are the consequences if the 218 vote is no, and will this be publicized before the election?
Well, under AB 2701, in the case of Los Osos, I think it would be a continued uncertainty as to what would happen, and we certainly we'd only be speculating if we were to try to guess.
Will the full cost of a project be on the 218 vote, and will there be a cap on cost?
The answer to both of those is no. On John Diodati's work in that back panel, the Prop 218 vote is specifically can only cover the special benefits associated with a project. And those special benefits are less than 100% of the project cost. Anything above and beyond the special benefits will have to be paid through other revenue sources, either through rates and charges and monthly bills. Let me back up. The Prop 218 vote and assessments, that's what goes on property tax bills. But the additional funding for the project would be through rates and charges. That includes some of the basic operations and maintenance requirements. But it can also include capital costs that aren't special benefits. For example, enhancements of a project to do water management activities are arguably not a special benefit associated with a wastewater project. That's where we could look to the water companies to help participate in funding of those aspects of a project. But again, the special benefits, by definition and by statute, are less than 100% of the cost. And so, but the point also is that at the time of the Prop 218 election, we have to fully identify what 100% of the costs are and how those would be charged either through rates and charges and what the bottom line impact would be to property owners and residences. So no, not 100% of the costs. yes, we do need to present to identify what all the costs will be and how those would be paid for. But then the other side of, is there a cap on the costs? And ultimately, no, there really is never a cap on costs on public works projects.
Could you please explain special versus general benefit under Prop 218?
I can discuss a little bit of what I know about general and special benefits, but one of the important points to make right now is that I'm not a registered professional engineer in the state of California. And under our statutes, it's only a registered professional engineer who can stamp and do the final certification of special versus general benefits. But in general terms, the special benefits associated with a wastewater project would be things like the basic costs of collection and treatment and disposal of the waste, the primary purpose for which you're looking at a project. Now, some of the general benefits could be any supplemental revenues. Those general benefits need to be paid for through the rates and charges, because even if they're not special benefits, they're still requirements of the project.
How much money is left to study viable project alternatives?
Well, we have a $2 million budget overall, and I'm not sure how much we've spent, probably somewhere, I'm guessing, between $50,000 and $100,000. So we still have the preponderance of that $2 million left.
How does the county plan to address the two major constituencies in Los Osos? The first, the registered voters who control the board of the CSD, and about 40% are not property owners, and then two, the property owners, about 40% who cannot vote in Los Osos because they live elsewhere.
Well, first off, in terms of our public communications, we plan on providing information to everybody. With respect to recognizing the difference between property owners and registered voters, property owners are the ones who are going to vote on the Prop 218 election. And so, certainly there's going to be a need to address their concerns as property owners. But it's everybody who is going to be providing votes on the community advisory vote, and it's the residents, even if you're not property owners, who still live in the community. And so that's sort of the balance. The one is the property owners have to make a commitment on a 218 election, but everybody is living in the community and has interest in how the project actually gets developed.
For the 218 vote, will you have choices, for example, in location and cost, and be able to vote for them?
No. The 218 vote is a vote on a wastewater project. And what our effort has to be is to clearly identify going into the board hearing so that the board can adopt that viable project alternatives of which ones are really truly on the table prior to the 218 vote. But the 218 vote itself, it's a funding authorization. It's not a project vote.
Will private funding be evaluated as well as public funds? And please estimate the time requirements for the steering committee.
Okay, first off, will private financing as well as public financing be evaluated? And that is a definite yes. In AB 2701, in the governor's signing message, the governor directed the State Water Resource Control Board that in any reissue, and so $6.5 million of, and I've already done some of the analysis, and this will be on a technical memorandum in our website soon, but the $6.5 million if we think about it in points, then if the state says, hey, we'll lend you $25 million in SRF loans, well, $6.5 million worth of points on a $25 million loan is simply not going to pencil out when we compare it to the cost of borrowing on the private markets. If, on the other hand, $6.5 million in points on a much larger loan, and I'm just going to throw out a hypothetical number of $100 million, well, when we look at that, and then the low interest features of the state loan, that would pencil out as being preferable to private options. And so that's one example of looking at private versus public financing. We know that the SRF loan has an advantage about having a low interest rate associated with it, but the $6.5 million of cost that was in the governor's signing message really needs to be addressed as points on that government loan, and how does that compare to private financing that might be available. And then the other option on private financing was the one that John Waddell had spoken to a little bit, and that's things like the Orenco option and some privatization features. Yes.
A little change of pace here. What influence will the regional board have over the project alternatives?
Say that again.
What influence will the regional board have over the project alternatives?
Well, I think that I'm going to use that as the wrap-up question on the index card so we can get to the media and then to LOCSD next. But certainly the regional board as a regulatory agency is going to have influence on the development of project alternatives. Their primary regulatory role when it comes to a community wastewater project is on the waste discharge requirements. And that is, what is it that comes out of the back end of our wastewater project? Does it meet their basin management plan? Does it meet the water quality requirements? What's going to be utilized? And that's the interaction that is most important for us to have with the regional board so that when we're looking at viable project alternatives, that we believe that it's one that's going to be permitted by the regional board. But it's primarily, again, on what is going to be the byproduct of the wastewater treatment plant. There are some other things I've heard most recently in some of our preliminary research that not the regional board, but the state board, when under an SRF loan, you know, since they, one of my upcoming work efforts is to take all the questions and comments that we've received so far and put together some papers on commonly asked questions, make sure that that gets distributed as well as posted to the website. So sorry that we didn't have an answer, didn't have an opportunity to address all of the questions that were posed. But at this point in time, I know that we have at least a few members of the media here and would like to give them an opportunity to ask any questions if they want to. Well, that looks like that was easy, so now for the tough ones, I think. And then, you know, depending, what I wanted to target was until about 9:30, and so that means that the CSD board has plenty of time to ask questions, and it's what I wanted to do, and if we happen to have a little bit of time, then again, I want to be able to let everybody sort of come down to the floor and have some final conversations with everybody, but...
Good evening, and thank you for coming. I am Julie Tacker. You know, I have to say this. In 1998, this community rallied together to take the project away from you. It goes against my very grain to be doing this tonight. Will the $2 million that the board has allocated for your pursuit be wrapped into the 218?
I think that because 218, again, is special versus general benefits, you know, it certainly is the county's policy on all projects that we implement that the preliminary costs end up getting folded into the total project costs.
So the answer is yes.
Well, ultimately, it's a policy decision by the Board of Supervisors in the end, but the current policy that we work under on all projects is yes.
Yes. Just so we all know. You mentioned that you were maybe intrigued by the peer review and the stance that they took in prioritizing the project, wastewater versus water management.
Correct.
Be careful. Be very careful. Rob Miller gave that presentation to our board, and I don't believe that it was like anything but maybe a nose ahead should it be in a race that, you know, cleaning up the water is a water management plan. So that's a word of caution, not really a question, but...
Can I respond?
Please.
I agree. Certainly what I believe that the NWRI report does on its priorities is it gives us something to seriously think about in terms of the development of a project alternative. The idea that other project alternatives would include, you know, a much broader scope, but that one project alternative should look at, you know, sort of the very basic a wastewater project. And even in doing so, making sure that we have the opportunity to incorporate, or the water companies have the opportunity to incorporate water management practices. But I didn't want to imply that that's the only approach that should be taken in development of viable project alternatives. It's just one thing that should be considered in those efforts.
Very good. One thing that you might also note in their analysis is that they had a unanimous.
Yes, they did.
Unanimous. They unanimously chose anything but an in-town site for a sewage treatment facility.
Yeah, and my recollection during the discussions were that when it came to the cost, the bid estimates on the Tri-W site themselves for a 1.3, 1.5 MGD plant, they were pretty astonished at how high the bids came in. But certainly that is also a noteworthy comment that came out of their report.
Yeah, we were there. We saw those bids come in, too. I'll wrap up because I know I tend to be long-winded, but this question might be for Mark.
Okay.
This board rescinded the overriding considerations from the environmental impact report, the statement of overriding considerations, and I'd like to know how that works with what you will be pursuing and what maybe that has done to the document.
Without getting too terribly complicated, I mentioned earlier something called the Notice of Determination, which is the final step in a CEQA process. Notice of Determination typically has attached to it something called findings, which are very specifically laid out on how they have to be done in the law. Something called a Statement of Overriding Considerations may be part of an agency's findings. And that's where the agency must adopt their own separate set of findings and file their own notice of determination. So if the county were to proceed with the project under CEQA, there would have to be a notice of determination. And if there were significant effects that the board wanted to override, there would have to be a statement of overriding considerations. And that would be true whether or not the initial agency maintained their findings or vacated them.
Okay. You'll probably have something more on that, I hope. One more for you, Paavo. And that is...
Her last one's always the toughest, by the way.
Well, really, it probably isn't. It kind of goes back to that priority and prioritization, and that I would like to know if the project you pursue will include water conservation as an element. And just because I've been reading, you say it might cause insomnia, or I've been there. What I've been reading recently and rereading is our urban water management plan written in 2000. We contracted out to Wallace Group, who hired Bill Madouse, and he's well known in the field. He suggested at the time that 90% of our homes are still using the high flow toilets, and that's obscene. And that's why I ask, will our wastewater project address that? Because, of course, we all know the less water we use, the less water we're polluting, the less water we're having to treat, yada, yada, yada.
Yes. You know, it's a really good question, because I think what it really points to also is one of the areas where interagency cooperation is absolutely needed. And that's the overlap between the wastewater and the water side of it. Certainly the CSD and the other two water companies are the actual purveyors, and so they have the direct role associated with water management. But to the degree that conservation will help reduce flows into the wastewater plant itself, then that's an aspect that we need to help address as well. You know, the bottom line is I actually helped work with Madeus on that report at that period of time when I was consulting. And so I understand some of the details associated with the need to do so, and, you know, working with your agency and the other water companies will be very important on in the future.
Okay.
First of all, I want to say thank you, Pavel, and your staff, and as someone who voted against the formation of the CSD 10 years ago, I want to say welcome back. And a couple questions. One, can you elaborate a little bit more on your site analysis? And
Probably not, because right now what we know is that there have been a number of sites that have been identified in the past, and what we have not yet done is gone into the depth of you know, what's the challenges for the various sites. But certainly the Ripley report that was recently prepared has got updated information that we're going to find useful. But there's also a number of other reports in the past that have been done. We've established some contacts with the National Estuary, Morro Bay's National Estuary Program, because just in looking at different alternatives, what sites are really available? Is there anything that can be done in conjunction with green space or green belt types of needs and that kind of stuff? But we really haven't, other than doing a tour when the NWRI came through, we have not yet gotten into the analysis associated with sites, and certainly there's a lot of work that's going to need to be done there.
The second question is, will there be a detailed analysis of the previous engineer's estimate for and the construction bids?
Oh, yeah, certainly. We think that at a minimum, the existing construction activity that did occur provides us with really good information on rates of production. Just even a little bit of work that a contractor does gives us the ability to go in there, analyze the time taken, you know, their rate of work, that multiplied essentially by their cost per, you know, crew hour, gives us the ability to go in there and analyze what their costs are versus what the bids are. Bids can be extremely difficult to use just as the basis of what it should cost to build a system. We know that in California especially, but throughout the nation, the bidding climate on public works projects in the last several years has really been to the contractor's advantage. The Los Osos project wasn't the only one that received single bids on different aspects. It's natural for the contractors essentially to build premiums in or contingencies into their bids, and that has resulted in some really significant increases in bids, especially on Caltrans projects, which are heavily with oil and asphalt types of things. We didn't really point to it. The Caltrans index was shown up there, and that had really gone through a jump. But overall, on public works projects, they have gone jumped up too. In any case, sort of making this a long answer when it should have been shorter. But the point is that bids sometimes are influenced by a number of different factors. But when the contractor has actually gone to work and we can look at their rates of production and do some analysis there, it gives us a better ability to say what should it have cost. And when we look at, you know, moving forward with a new project, certainly that information is very important to have.
Good evening, everyone. Thanks for showing up tonight. I'm Chuck Cicinia, and I voted for the formation of a CSD. I'm still happy you're here. You have resources that we just don't have available here in the district. And thank you for the presentation and for all of you coming out. I have complete confidence in the staff people that I know, and I'm sure the others are just as qualified. I have more comments, really, than questions. I wanted to stress again the importance of full cost disclosure of the different alternatives. It was, I think, one of the key elements that went wrong before when a project cost quadrupled from the time that the community got to vote. If you remember, George Gibson specifically asked questions in commenting on the previous EIR about different alternatives and costs. People want to know what it's going to cost them. At that time, even in a public disclosure document, that wasn't deemed important, but it is. The NWRI report, I'm glad that that led to a reconsideration of the step alternative being back on the table. I'm glad that peer review was finally done. I would also comment that not only did their panel unanimously recommend out of town, all the previous EIRs have chosen environmentally preferred sites out of town. The couple of questions. Privatization is a possibility now. It seemed like in the past we had heard that the county did not have the authority to enter into boot type agreements?
Actually, the way that that question was originally posed to us in the last couple months is, do we have the design build authority? And it's currently our belief is that we don't have design build authority. And the difference between design build and this boot is that under boot, it's categorically allowed throughout the state, but design build, your agency has to somehow be specified in order to get that authorization. And even our county has some ability to do it, but we just don't believe we have the authorization. Design build, though, is where the public agency continues to own and operate throughout the entire process. Boot is a little bit different. The actual ownership of the facilities moves to the private hands for about a 20-year period before it transfers back.
Table, and thank you for bringing that up. I appreciate the fact you didn't shy away from the tough questions, points on future loans and things like that. Thank you. One last question, and the NWRI peer review talked about the Broderson site, and use of that site really needs to be evaluated under Department of Health Services recharge guidelines, not just discharge guidelines. What's your take on that?
We agree, and one of the issues there is that the current permit that was established for the Broderson site is considered to be a discharge site. And the difference between discharge and recharge is important in the regulatory scheme. The Department of Health Services was the one who made that call that it was a discharge site. But certainly one of the cons that we think should be in the pro-con analysis is that that determination that it's a discharge site is always subject to future regulatory change. So even though the initial permit was as a discharge site, we believe that that was still subject to change over time, and then could, if it was later established to be a recharge site, could change the water quality requirements, not from the regional board's perspective, but from the Department of Health Services perspective. It's certainly a very touchy issue and one that needs to be considered carefully as we perceive. But the bottom line, the NWRI report identified that as a risk issue, and we do believe it is a risk issue that has to be adequately addressed. With Broderson overall and with the challenges at that site, we still think that the potential of its use needs to still continue to be considered, maybe in a sort of a hybrid type of a disposal methodology. But again, a lot of work needs to be done on that.
Hi, I'm Steve Sennon. I'm your, one of the directors on the CSG. And I'd like to thank you all for coming out. And I feel it's a new wind in town. And I'm looking forward to a lot of positive things. I'm glad we can take advantage of your ability as a full-service public works department. And I think we'll all appreciate the oversight, active participation, knowledge base, and experience that you bring to this type of project. And I'm very hopeful for the progress that you'll make on this. And I feel you're not going to develop the project and its consultants who are making recommendations. And of utmost concern to me is that there will be a division in the project management so that it will not be held with the consultant. It'll be held by the county, the people building it, and using our money to build it. And furthermore, the it goes into construction management too. And the administration of the construction contract will not be held by the people who actually, the consultants that designed it, will not be overseeing the construction and inspection of it. And I think that's a tremendous thing and a big asset to our community. It may be expensive, it may be unaffordable, but at least we know that the money's being spent for truly a good project and worthwhile and value-based product. And it won't be politically motivated like the old project was, in which we accepted almost single bidder bids, and I think it's a blessing. I thank you all.
Thanks, Steve. And Steve sort of touches on an important aspect that when, you know, when a project gets designed, that sometimes the design engineer is also the construction manager. Sometimes the design engineer is not the construction manager. And in both cases, on our large projects, it's sort of been that we've all, well, on Lopez and Nacimiento, we're having the construction manager separate from the design engineer. And especially on complicated projects, the idea that if it's a simple technology project, that there's money to be saved by just simply having the design engineer also do the construction management, because the design engineer already knows the job. But when it comes to complicated projects, our department has held the position that we need to have a different firm doing CM or construction management work. Because if problems develop on a project, it really is one of two different reasons, maybe three. The third would be site conditions, just things that nobody anticipated. But essentially, if there's errors or problems, people problems, if you will, it's either the contractor themselves who aren't doing what they need to be doing, or it's the design engineer who made a mistake along the way. And an independent construction management firm is the best voice at being able to evaluate, okay, is this a contractor issue or is this a design issue? And actually right now, Corollo Engineers is simply doing alternatives analysis. Certainly they've designed a lot of projects throughout the state, but that's not within their scope of work yet. And I think even the Petaluma case was one that you guys recently worked on, which...
It's under construction.
Yeah, it's just under construction, which is, you know, had some of the many challenges that that we see here in Los Osos too, but their work right now is purely on alternatives analysis. Lisa? Hi, Lisa.
Good evening. I'm Lisa Schicker, president of this CSD. My fellow directors have asked most of the questions that I wanted to ask too, but I also wanted to thank you all for being here. Thank you for the great presentation. Just a few things I'd like to comment on too. I noticed on some of the comments that you were making, I would be thinking about things that I could help provide for you because of my knowledge on the project and studying it and being involved with it for the last almost 4 years now. And so how can we on the CSD best be a partner with you in working forward in the next year?
You know, that's another really good question, and it's a tough one too, because obviously my bosses are Mr. Gibson and the other board of directors. So I always have to be very careful of making sure that I have one, you know, agency and one board that I'm formally reporting to. But then the issue is, okay, how can we, you know, even if I'm not formally reporting to the CSD board, how can we work together? And I think that a couple of the main opportunities, again, exist on the issues associated with water management. And, you know, Julie mentioned water conservation efforts and how our efforts on the wastewater project will relate to the water management responsibilities that your district and the others continue to have. Another big area I think that's really important is in the pursuing of grants. Because certainly, you know, we have a depth of resources in the Public Works Department to work on a number of issues, whether it's financial strategies or grant strategies or those types of work efforts, and that we're not as solely reliant on consultants as either the CSD or the other CSDs in the region. You know, that's not a unique challenge of Los Osos, but is common to all the CSDs. And so we have a depth of resources that, and, you know, and hopefully everybody understands that the group that we brought today are very committed individuals who want to help work on this issue. But when it comes to actually pursuing the grant, the county still, who are actually living here, and I think that dual approach with us working with the resources that we have on staff, as well as the CSD and the individuals in the community, sort of teaming up on the pursuing of grants, is an important strategy that we have to follow. And the sooner we can get through some of the little bumps in the road we have right now, the better we're going to be in addressing those issues down the line.
Okay, but just 2 points I want to mention because I heard them and they're important. And the direction you're going with us helping you didn't include those. When you talked about rates of production, I really would probably address this to the engineers. We have some serious concerns about the rates of production numbers you would gather from the data that was collected by the work that was done, and I can provide that information to you. There's some reasons why, and I can explain that in more detail. And that's important. Also, the two Johns in the presentations tonight did really great jobs and new information for us that were never considered. And the question was contracting options. Why would you consider the contracting options that John described after the 218 versus before the 218 if you're doing a project alternatives analysis with costs included?
Well, so you know, sort of the sequencing of work is that the first thing in doing the alternatives analysis and figuring out what's the technology, what type of a project is going to get built. And then once that is determined, then we look at contracting methods in order to help reduce the overall project costs. And that's also part of sort of the value engineering process as well, is that once we've scoped in on a project, then it's contracting methods and value engineering, which should help reduce the costs associated with a project, or at least what our initial estimates are. So, you know, it's the sequence. It's kind of like building a house. If you're going to build a house, you got to start with the foundation and build up from there. On this process, we have to start with the alternatives analysis and then build from there, and so contracting methods would be a subsequent step.
Okay, it's just, it includes costs, so that's important. What, as being an elected official now and being involved, the three things that I have heard from the community that are the most important are affordability and environmental and fear about agencies coming and into their lives and affecting them. And we all, most of us witnessed what happened at the regional board last week. And that segues into my next question. How will the county, if or will the county address the basin plan, the CDOs, anything involved with the regional board, and how it has affected individuals' lives in Los Osos?
We provide services, whether it's water or it's wastewater, or roads and transportation services. That's really what we are, is we're a service provider. We're not really effective in getting in there and trying to tell regulatory agencies what they should or should not be doing. And so the best thing that we can offer to the issue is to work just as best as we can to get viable project alternatives on the table, work with the community, and try to resolve this issue as you know, best as we can.
Okay, and then my final question, because I know it's time to go, was about, the three, environmental, affordability, and agency involvement in people's personal lives. Affordability is so huge. The grants, you've really covered well tonight. And the information that John D., I'm sorry, I can't say his last name yet, I'll learn it, but he gave us new information on rural programs.
Right.
Will he be producing a series of memos included for the people? I think it'd be very helpful.
Yeah, whether it's him or whether it, I mean, certainly in pursuing grants and anything that's a financial related issue, I'll be taking more of a direct involvement in. And we will be working more on that. And what John really addressed is that there's two types. There's grants associated with just reducing overall project costs. It's community-wide grants. And then grants that can be targeted specifically to the low-income or medium to low-income individuals. And I think that both of those we have to try to get to come into play on in this situation.
Sorry, one more. This is okay. Important, too. The NWRI report, which was the independent review of the last project report update, you mentioned that the top priority was groundwater cleanup, and then groundwater management was secondary.
Right.
But because the Coastal Commission is requiring a groundwater management plan as part of the permit, and because we want to leave all our alternatives open for solving that, because that is the bigger issue, I just wanted to make that comment and enter it.
Well, and it is really important. Again, and that's where the NWRI report did not say groundwater management is not an issue. They said it is a critical issue as well. And with relationship to the coastal development permit conditions, the HCP, the water management plan, that's especially important to individuals who are, you know, have the undeveloped infill lots and who want to build the houses, because those things have to be addressed under the coastal development permit before that new construction can occur. And I've got to tell you, some of the posted comments that we've gotten to the website have exactly been from individuals who have owned lots to be solved before some of those individuals who have owned lots for a long time can actually, you know, construct their dream houses in many cases.
Thank you very much.
So, Again, we're going to just jump down now, and you know, if anybody wants to talk to any of us individually, you know, grab us or whatever. We appreciate everybody's attendance, and it was a long meeting. Certainly most of you stuck it out for the whole thing, and thanks again for showing up.